Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. We've arrived at another Thanksgiving, and that means another God and Country program about the differences between how the right and the left look at Thanksgiving and American history. To begin with, gratitude is a linchpin of the Christian faith. Ingratitude is a linchpin of Satan's kingdom. Linchpin has come to mean that which is important or crucial. It originally just meant a piece of metal that held two things together. A linchpin held the caboose to the engine. And it's a good metaphor for the importance of gratitude. Attached to gratitude is all sorts of virtues. Gratitude opens the door of heaven. Ingratitude is a path to all sorts of evils, resentment, bitterness, rebellion. In the Genesis fall, Satan tempted Adam and Eve to be ungrateful. Rather than being satisfied and thankful for all that they were given in paradise, Satan made them ungrateful that God prohibited them from the forbidden fruit. The Apostle Paul explains in Romans chapter 1 how ancient cultures departed from God, and it all started with ingratitude. Romans chapter 1 verse 21, "For even though they knew God, they didn't honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened." First comes ingratitude. You think you're entitled to something. You get an attitude of entitlement. You look at all that you don't have. You begin to blame others for your lack. Then you become futile in your speculations and your foolish heart is darkened. The word here, speculations, dialogamos, means one's reasonings. When you have the attitude of ingratitude, you lose your ability to reason correctly because you see everything through the wrong perspective, the wrong worldview, the wrong lens. It's like looking at everything through amber-colored sunglasses. Everything looks amber. If you start off with the assumption that you've been cheated, that you deserve more, that people owe you a living, you're going to see evil in the good. And you will think your judgment is rational and just because it makes sense given your foundational assumptions. But your underlying premise is wrong, that you deserve more, that you deserve to take and not give, that life is about empowerment rather than submission, humility, and love. And building on the wrong foundation, your conclusions and your policies are going to be wrong. There's a whole political platform that can be built upon ingratitude. Ancient Israel, in her apostasy from God, is always that biblical example that we should look to. I mean, look at how much of the Bible is dedicated to the history of Israel. Well, ancient Israel in her apostasy became extremely unthankful in regard to her history, in regard to God's laws, in regard to God's dealings with her. Deuteronomy 32:18, "You neglected the rock who begot you, and you forgot the God who gave you birth." There's that old Jewish saying, if we're God's chosen people, let him choose someone else the next time. That's ingratitude. Remember in the wilderness wanderings, the Israelites weren't thankful for the freedom they received to worship God in the wilderness. Exodus chapter 16, verse 2, "The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, 'Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill us, this whole assembly, with hunger.'" And Numbers chapter 11, verse 1, "Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them." You know, notice that it's wrong to complain about a supposed absence of some benefit. But it's also a sin to complain about adversity, that which most people think it's okay to complain about. Now, the problem here for these people was ungodly priorities. They valued material comforts over their spiritual retreat with God in the wilderness, their opportunity to worship God. You can have all of those fine clothing, all of that fine food, all of those nice comforts. I would just love for an opportunity to go out into the wilderness, have nothing, and be able to meet with and worship God. But not this people. Well, those wrong priorities resulted in a lack of gratitude. They saw the glass half empty rather than half filled, because they wanted to fill it with worldly sensual desires. Are there people like this today? Especially among the ungodly, the secularists? Absolutely. The conservative commentator Dennis Prager recently wrote a very astute piece entitled, "Your Past is Terrible and Your Future is Terrible, What the Left Tells Young Americans." Quote, "The left is telling American youth the American past is a story of genocide, slavery, racism, patriarchy, and colonialism. You should be ashamed of it. As regards to your future, your very existence is in jeopardy. You may well die at a young age unless society completely shifts from fossil fuels. If you're a girl, you should know that American society has contempt for you. You will be paid less than a man for the exact same work. If you're a young black, the most important thing for you to know is that this country loathes you, that racism is part of our DNA of the country. If you are a young Latino, you're to know that the white majority is so xenophobic that if it could, it would expel you from the country. If you're a white male, you are the recipient of unearned privilege. You are a racist. And boys and girls, you need to know from as young an age as possible that there is actually no such thing as boys or girls. And young people should know that there's no God, so don't look to God or religion for meaning. That is for the emotionally handicapped and for the intellectual lightweights. For meaning, look to social action. Christianity, the religion of the great majority of Americans since America's founding, the religion of nearly all of your parents and grandparents, justified slavery, slaughtered Native Americans, and persecuted the gays. And in our time, most people who call themselves believing Christians are bigoted and prejudiced. They're hypocrites. Whatever good was achieved was done by those who believe in secular enlightenment values, not Judeo-Christian values. Western civilization is nothing for you to be proud of. It is neither culturally nor morally superior to any other civilization or culture. In many ways, it is worse. It is largely a record of persecution and genocide. That's why you will no longer celebrate Columbus Day, but rather Indigenous People Day," unquote, Dennis Prager. So Prager's comments really do sum up the attitude on the left, the spirit of ungratefulness, ingratitude, criticism, fault-finding, an ingratitude fostered by a social, ideological justification. But why? Why do they complain so much about the past, the present, and the future? My guess, I believe I have the Bible's backing on this, is that it is rooted in a deep-seated hatred of God's truth. In just the same way that the Israelites developed a bad attitude of ingratitude in the wilderness wanderings. If they weren't fighting God so much in their conscience, they would have been so thankful for all of their blessings. Now, on a political level, the reason for the ingratitude is that if you want to change something, if you want to overthrow something, you have to criticize and denigrate it. You can't get people to fundamentally change America unless you convince them that the status quo is evil. The academic Marxists in universities who have developed critical theory and the deconstruction of Western Christian values, they did this in order to build the case that the American Constitution needs to be replaced with communism. I mean, you can even hear this in Bernie Sanders in his campaign speeches. He is an avowed communist. He says we need to understand the magnitude of the crisis in America. And then he goes on to complain about all of the economic deprivation and the injustices in America. And you wouldn't think this is true, because institutional racism is really a thing of the past. And today people are just tripping over themselves, trying to be the first not to be a racist. And the economy is booming. And we're the wealthiest people in the world. But millennials, who keep hearing how bad things are, start to believe it. It's like a comic scene in a play or movie where a political agitator stands up on a soapbox and starts telling people how terrible things are. And those hard hat workers standing there begin to gradually nod their head. And they say, hey, I never thought of that before. My life is miserable. Things are terrible. Why do I even have to work for a living? So when you want to change something, you have to criticize it. When you want power for yourself, you have to find fault with the powers that be. You have to make people ungrateful in order to get them to rebel. Satan had to make Eve ungrateful. So when David's son, Absalom, wanted to take the throne of Israel for himself, what did he do? He stood at the gate, alleging that the current system is unfair and unjust. You need to put him in charge. 2 Samuel chapter 15. Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. And when any man had a suit to come to the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, see, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you on the part of the king. Oh, that you would appoint me judge in the land, I would give you justice. So let's not be naive. Understand that the current ideology of the left is designed to make you ungrateful, to make you think you're a victim, that people are actually out to oppress you by their businesses, by their labors, by their talents, so that you will put all of your private property into the hands of government. The left wants people to view the world as the oppressed versus the oppressor. That every institution, every value has been created by the powerful to keep you down. And they are selling this as a way to view everything, so that they can discredit traditional American Christian values, those values of personal accountability, responsibility, and morality, the very things they hate. Does this all sound familiar? This was Satan's lie in the garden, telling the first couple that all of God's paradise, all of God's laws, all of his values were just meant to keep you down, to press you. And the new slogan for the left is being woke. And the lie is that you've been asleep to the nature of things, that you should finally wake up and see everything is about the powerful trying to keep you down. Being woke was Satan's temptation, his lie in Genesis chapter 3, that your eyes will be opened. But actually, the result was spiritual blindness. Now, all of this ingratitude includes a revisionist history of America, which we must be aware of, claiming that the real purpose of the United States was to hold slaves, that America was founded not to promote freedom, but oppression. And this indoctrination used to be relegated to Marxist college classrooms, where they taught Howard Zinn's revisionist people's history of America. But now it's being taught in high schools, where students are being taught the alleged evils of the Western world. They're holding mock trials against America. A whole program could be dedicated to this new curriculum in California schools, but that's another program for the future. But again, why this agenda? To discredit Christian culture, to justify the overturning of Christian laws and freedoms. To create a new world order, you must depict the old world as evil. And these are just signs of the times. Remember, these things will come to pass to prepare the world to embrace the Antichrist. As the prophecy of Daniel 7 reads, he, the Antichrist, will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the High One. And he will intend to make alterations in times and laws. Expect to see lots of alterations in times and laws. The Christian West will be replaced with paganism. And this is beyond human ingenuity. This is demonic. As James writes, this wisdom does not come from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. I mean, it's true that ungodly people can be very devious and conspiratorial. But this current attack on America's founding has the fingerprints of Satan all over it. The doctrine of demons, as Paul calls it. I just don't think people are smart enough to create and coordinate this kind of movement on their own. It's almost like people are being hypnotized by this racist critical theory. The emphasis is also on the critical. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist that is now already working in the world, 1 John chapter 3. So please be aware of and watch out for the political, social, academic, philosophical application of ingratitude, which is going to result in spiritual rebellion. And keep in mind that as Christians, we can also be influenced by these lies. Satan will tempt us. He will throw his fiery darts at us. And even though you might not become a radical SJW, you still might lose some of your moral outrage, thinking that, oh, well, maybe some of this is true. And that's all that Satan wants for the church, just for us to lose our edge, to lose our voice, to make us weak and silent. So as we're coming upon Thanksgiving, while we're rejoicing in our country and in our history, the world and evil actors are cursing these things. So in closing, let me share just one example of what we should be aware of. The New York Times 1619 Project, a series of editorial articles in the New York Times promoting the narrative that America was founded as an evil, racist country. From the New York Times itself, quote, in August of 1619, a ship appeared on this horizon near Point Comfort, a coastal port in the English colony of Virginia. It carried more than 20 enslaved Africans who were sold to the colonists. No aspect of the country that would be formed here has been untouched by the years of slavery that followed. In the 400th anniversary of this fateful moment, it is time to tell our story truthfully. The 1619 Project is a major initiative from the New York Times observing the 400th anniversary of the beginning of America's slavery. It aims to reframe the country's history, understanding 1619 as our true founding, and placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black America at the very center of the story we tell ourselves about who we are. So the 1619 Project is claiming that America needs to be defined not by 1776 in the Constitution, but by the first slave ship coming to America in 1619. And the Times encourages public schools to adopt an accompanying 1619 Project curriculum to spread the message to young Americans. And this narrative is not in the fringe. This is thoroughly embraced by the political left, by leaders in the Democratic Party. Beto O'Rourke, in a recent interview, said the following: the foundation of this country is an extraordinarily brutal one. I think of Nicole Hannah-Jones, the 1619 Project. The case that she makes has persuaded me. You mark the foundation of America not on the 4th of July, 1776, but on the 20th of August, 1619. The first time someone was kidnapped from West Africa, brought here against their will, made to build the wealth, the success, the greatness of America, which neither they nor their descendants alive today are able to fully participate in. And we know that from any way we can cut it or measure it, there is 10 times the wealth in white America than there is in black America. Well, after Beto's statement, an article came out from the Federalist, why Beto O'Rourke's embrace of the 1619 Project is dangerous. Well, let me quickly break down some of Beto's claims here. These claims are taken to be gospel truth, but they're really just speculations and opinions based upon his worldview. First, Beto claims that the foundation of this country is extraordinarily brutal. Well, it all depends what you consider is the foundation of this country. Did Jamestown, the Jamestown slave traders, found this country? No. It is well known and documented that the founders of this country wanted to do away with slavery. But they knew they couldn't do it just yet if they wanted to unite the country. It would take another 75 years before they could outlaw slavery. The founders were fighting this old holdover from Europe. And it would take a whole program to go into all of the quotes of the founders in regard to their opposition to slavery. But let me just read one piece from an article in City Journal. 1776, not 1619. America's founding was not defined by slavery and white supremacy, quite the contrary, by Arthur Millick. He says, to make America's founding contemptible, one must hide, ignore, and distort the founders' writings and thoughts. Irresponsibly omitted from this narrative is the fact that not a single major founder endorsed slavery. On the contrary, the founders unambiguously saw slavery as evil. George Washington said, "There is not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of it." And Thomas Jefferson's original draft of the Declaration of Independence calls slave trade an execrable commerce, an affront against human nature itself. Governor Morris called slavery a nefarious institution and the curse of heaven. And John Jay said, "It is much to be wished that slavery may be abolished. To contend for our own liberty and to deny that blessing to others involves an inconsistency not to be excused." Franklin, Madison, Adams, Hamilton spoke strongly against the institution of slavery also. Unquote, City Journal, Arthur Millick. So the United States from its very inception was one of fighting against this old European economic system of slavery. But what does the left want to do? They want to depict America as fundamentally racist and corrupt, and we know why they want to do this. Now, back to this claim that Jamestown's slavery is the founding or the foundation of America. Every nation, every people group, in every age has evil actors. Does that define a country? If a country has murderers, kidnappers, rapists, thieves, well, it could define the founding of a country if that was its founding philosophy. If you read older American history books, most of which give a Christian perspective, Jamestown was considered a blight on the American experience because the settlers at Jamestown came for a quick buck. Rather than the Plymouth Colony in Massachusetts arriving for the purpose of evangelism and religious freedom, the Jamestown colony failed and collapsed. It disappeared off the map. Therefore, Jamestown was never associated with the founding of America. The Plymouth Colony considered Jamestown the graves of the greedy. But this is something the Bible often refers to, where the ungodly create the problems and the abuses, and then they turn around and blame the righteous for the very abuses that they cause. The descendants of the ungodly blame the righteous for the sins of their corrupt forefathers. King Ahab, he meets the prophet of the Lord, Elijah, and he calls Elijah the troubler of Israel, the reason for all of Israel's sufferings. So Elijah responds, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord. So expect the wicked to always be blaming the righteous for their own behavior. And Beto's next comment was that I think Nicole Hannah-Jones, the 1619 Project, the case that she makes has persuaded me. And this is a reminder of how powerful a lie can be. When the public, the students, are taught the lie and not the other side of the story. And many people are easily persuaded by wrong ideology. As Jesus said, many false prophets have gone out into the world. Beto's third point, he states the left's assumption that, quote, the slaves built the wealth, the success, the greatness of America, which neither they nor their descendants alive today are able to fully participate in. Really? Well, even Nicole Hannah-Jones of the 1619 Project received a free public school education, a degree from Notre Dame, a degree from NC State. How is she not participating in the wealth, success, and the greatness of America? And this is a hard thing to admit, but the fact is slavery is one of the most inefficient, wasteful means of production. Slavery as an economic system kept the South very poor. The plantation model is communistic. It failed in the Plymouth Colony, and it failed in the South in the 19th century. At the time of the Civil War, the economy of the North, without slavery, was an industrial powerhouse. The South was locked into an impoverished agricultural economy. The North had 90% of the nation's manufacturing. And the truth is that the slaves were abused, their labor was wasted, and unfortunately, they were not allowed to contribute to the wealth of America. Most of their wealth went up in smoke, tobacco smoke. And the fourth statement of Beto is that we know from any way that we can cut or measure it, there is 10 times the wealth in white America than there is in black America. Well, sure, there are income disparities in the world, but that's true for many immigrants. Latinos have a higher poverty rate than African Americans. And there are actually more white families living under the poverty level in America than there are black families living under the poverty level in America. So how do you explain that? Poverty is more a function of built-up generational education and wealth. And it takes a few generations for any people to break the cycle of skilllessness, if that's a word, and poverty. And if the children adopt a sinful lifestyle, they will sabotage whatever moral economic capital has been built up by the parents, as in the case of the prodigal son. The errors assume that the only cause for income disparity was the institutional racism in America. The Christian view is that long-term moral character is the main factor in wealth creation. Moral character is so powerful that it not only overcomes persecution and racism, it causes those obstacles to actually become stepping stones, as in the case of so many biblical characters like Joseph and Moses and Daniel. So there are many lies in the world today based upon people's wrong perceptions built upon ingratitude. And it causes the ungodly to become futile in their speculations, as in Romans 1:21. Even though they knew God, they didn't honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. So if you want to have God's blessing on your life, real success, start thanking God for where you are, for what you've been given, for your godly heritage. John Adams, the second president of the United States, had a very thankful Christian view of America's founding. His forefathers weren't perfect, but he saw in his forefathers a godly foundation upon which he could build. Henry Adams, John Adams' forefather, came to America in 1632. 150 years later, John Adams, his great-great-grandson, second president of the United States, had the following written on Henry Adams' tombstone. This stone and several others have been placed in this yard by a great-great-grandson out of a veneration of the piety, humility, simplicity, prudence, patience, temperance, frugality, industry, and perseverance of his ancestors, in hopes of recommending an imitation of their virtues to their posterity. Erected December 1832. What a difference there is between a godly gratitude for our Christian past, our heritage, and the spirit of ingratitude coming from the left. The confession of the godly is Psalm 16:6. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. Indeed, my heritage is beautiful to me. May God bless you and your whole family in this Thanksgiving season as you think and act by the Word of God.